Accession number 18668, Reel 2.
Eric Peters, Reel 2. You were just telling me about how you heard about the Korean War.
Yeah, well, so they were, and the clue where Korea was. But we were informed that the North Koreans had attacked the South Koreans across the 38th parallel, and that although there was American troops over there, they was overran by surprise. And we were informed that we was going to form a Commonwealth Brigade, and ourselves and the Middlesex would be leaving very shortly. Well, in about 5 days after we was on our way, we landed down to the docks. There again, a little incident happened. I was on an advance party down at the docks, Old Wharf it was called, and we got down there, and the amount of stuff that was on the docks, it was unbelievable. I thought, well, it'll take a couple of days to load this onto the ship. So we stacked our rifles up together and left a couple of lads to who didn't drink to look after them, and we went to one of the clubs, a British club, and the beer was free. The year we were going to war, so that was it. So we enjoyed ourselves. A few hours later, we staggered back, and the docks was empty. There wasn't a thing on the docks. Everything had gone. It had been put aboard HMS Ceylon, a cruiser. Anyway, we was whipped on and straight into the brig. Well, that wasn't bad either, because all the crew, the Navy lads, what do you want? Do you want some chips? Do you want egg and chips? Do you want some comics? They couldn't do enough for us, and we was in the brig. Anyway, next morning, we was up before this lieutenant who was in charge of the advance party, and he said, as soon as we volunteered to go to Korea, he says, you know, you were very stupid, which we were. He said, we'll forget all about it. And that was it. But I don't remember volunteering to go to Korea. But right, that was it. And then, because he let us out then, well, that day, the battalion arrived. Well, we was already on board boat. I've got the photographs of all the officers lined up on the docks. Any paraphernalia which I keep there, anyways, we all got on board. It was a terrific experience. Like, as soon as somebody got out of the bed or the bunk, somebody else would dive in, like, you know, but the Navy lads couldn't do enough for us. Say they're brilliant. It was tight, but anyway, we arrived at Korea, another experience there. We met by this Negro band, and all they played, not like our military band, it's the blues and boogie woogie, and it's a coloured band, a big band, it was about 40 of these, and it's controlled by, would you be a band master? It wasn't like a drum major, he had a little stick, a bit taller, bigger than the baton, like, but a whistle in his mouth, and he just blew on this whistle, and they knew exactly what they were doing. Like, it was fantastic. Anyways, we got off, and there was a train. We got to, at the march, this march, we struggled with all our gear to this train, and that was, I think that was made in one of the first trains ever to be made, I think. And we got on, and all the Navy lads got on with us, wanted to come up to the front with us, you know. And they were the MPs that got them all off. But we couldn't go very far, because then at that time, we was in a perimeter of 30 miles. That's all the perimeter around Pusan was the North Koreans all around it. So we knew, obviously, we couldn't go very far. We were told that. Went to a few apple orchards. The apples was all on the trees. It was midsummer, September 1st. We landed there 29th of August, so yeah, that's when we landed there. That's, I suppose we've gone for 20, No, near the 30 miles, because we landed up by just by the Nakatong River. And then we did a few... all the companies then were split up, a hill apiece kind of business, you know, and they sent out patrols. That's when we had our first casualties anyway. C Company sent out a patrol, only about 8 to 10 men. And they had come under very heavy fire. Captain Buchanan was it. The sergeant was it. Young Wally Sutherland was it. Anyway, they couldn't get to Kerry, Captain Buchanan, so he decided he would stay with his batman, who was also wounded, and told the rest to make their way back to the camp, which they did. But we never heard any more from that, from Captain Buchanan. Anyway, he was must have been captured, but once we'd moved on, Colonel Nielsen had sent a patrol back to where they knew they had gone for this on this patrol, and they found the graves of them, like, you know, so they'd been killed, like, two of them. That was our first casualty. Two killed and about eight wounded. And by this time, like, in Hong Kong, I'd been on a course to Singapore. I was a corporal then. And I come back and had a disagreement with my sergeant major, Tom Collett. So then I threw my tapes in. I didn't get bus. I threw them in. And of course, automatically, you're posted to another company then. And I was posted to A Company. And it was with Captain Buchanan from C Company. I knew him very well. He was my platoon officer for many years, you know. And I knew everybody in C Company and that patrol. But then I was in A Company then.
Which platoon in A Company were you in? Which platoon was it?
Oh, what heavens.
Doesn't matter if you can't remember.
Don't know.
What kind of disagreement had you had with the NCO?
We never got on well, me and Tom Collett. But what happened? When I came back from Singapore, and all the companies were split up. It was in Hong Kong, Tam Me, Queen's Barracks, Queen's Camp, Queen's Hill, Fan Ling. And I was having a drink with another corporal called Willie Stevenson, who was in A Company, and Don Mayle from Birkenhead, he was in C Company, Camp McCormick from Liverpool, he was in C Company, and three or four lads from A Company. All outside, not in a building. And Tom Collett, the CSM, coming round, he was the orderly officer. With everybody being split up, obviously, the corporals were doing orderly sergeant's duties, and the sergeant majors and some of the senior colour sergeants, things like that, were doing orderly officer. Because otherwise, they'd be on duty pretty frequent, wouldn't they? I mean, only four officers in a company. And he never even spoke to me. I couldn't care less, like. But he sent for me on Sunday morning, so I trotted up, just a pair of pumps and a pair of shorts on, no shirt and no socks. And he said something about I was drinking in the private's mess. And I said, well, I wasn't in any mess. I was sort of sitting outside. And he said, you're sitting in the private's area. I said, well, I don't know about that. I suddenly arrived back yesterday. I said, there's no dividing lines, like, you know. I said, anyway, I was sitting with the other NCOs. I'm not worried about other NCOs, because it's a different company. Like, and he was running on ranting and raving. And I just said, well, it's in your power to bust me, why don't you? He said, don't you worry. He said, I will the very first chance I get. And I said to him, oh, I might beat you to the punch. Now, I don't know how he took that. He said, what do you mean? And I just said, take it any way you like. And I left it to that. I don't even thought I was going to punch him, which I'm not that stupid. But I thought, I'll beat you to the punch. I told him in rather than give you the satisfaction of taking him. Like. Well, Monday morning, you go for the company commander, automatically, like, he asked me how I got on with the... I said, I don't know, sir. I said, they said they'll send and let you know. I said, I think I did all right. And they were very good, like, men. Decided, maybe, what he did. He says, and Colonel Peter wishes to revert. And the too like, what's the meaning of this? I said, yes, sir. He said, why? And I said, I spoke my mind. I said, I hate the sight, it made his guts. Oh, well, he wiped the floor with me then, like, many senior officers, I don't like, he said, but don't tell him to the face. I said, well, I'm sorry, sir, that's the way it is, like, and they're uneducated, I suppose. So, oh, that's so, okay, then, fall out, like, the NCO was always at the back of the platoon, and I get round the back, and NCO's out here, and I totally followed the rest of them, you know. Not you, he says, get ready for the commanding officer, 11 o'clock. Well, when you go before the CO, it's the kilt, the full dress. You don't go before him just dressed in your dungarees. So it, back to my little tent, get ready for the CO. And goes in before him, like, and he never asked me anything. He just said, you're Stuart. He said, I said, yes, sir. Never said why or nothing. I think the major had words with him, perhaps he didn't want to repeat it before, like. Because the RSM wasn't very pleased, like. Waste of bloody taxpayers' money, you know, send you on these courses, you know, and then waste of time, like, you know. It was a PT instructor's course, it was, at Singapore. And Tom Collett, the CSM, came out, he says, get back to the company and get a form to fill in for the president, he said, and get a transfer form, like, you know. I knew automatically I'd been transferred. So I went back to the company clerk. I said, you've got a form for reverting? Yeah, I said, fill that in. I said, you've got a transfer form? He said, yeah. Tell Tom Collett to stick it, see, so they did get that. But he came up and pat one orders a couple of days later, like, you know, called Peter's reversed back to the rank of private at his own request and not with a view to avoid trial by court-martial. Always the same old thing. And then a bit lower down, Private Peters is now transferred to A Company forthwith. that's how I joined A Company.
Were you happy in A Company?
Yes, very, yeah. Except first, then it was Major, I think his name was Howard, Major Howard, he used to call him the Black Mamba. He's Maltese extraction. And he's called the Black Mamba. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, like, you know. And he railroaded you in a sense, you know. He said, don't think, you know, that you're going to come in and disrupt my company. And I thought, well, just give a man a chance, like, you know. He wasn't with us. We didn't go to Korea with us. Major Wilson, you may have met, he's down south. Major General Wilson now. At least down south, he could tell you more about Korea than anybody else. Major Wilson, he's mentioned in that book quite a few times. Like, I met him at Stirling for a reunion at Stirling. I'm going off the story here, aren't I?
That's all right.
I met him at Stirling a couple of years back when they had the 40th anniversary of the Korean veterans of the battalion, and the chairman of the Bank of Scotland was in Korea as a young lieutenant, so he had lots to do with it. I think they funded it, well, mostly. And I was with this Scott William Stevens, I mentioned before, and well, he said, yeah, it is somebody you know. And I'd stand at the bar and I studied his face. I said, no, sorry, Willie. I said, should I know him? He said, yeah, he said, you should know him. He said, Major Wilson. Oh, I said, Chuckles. Oh, I said, I'm sorry, sir. You know, he said, not to worry. That's it. And he said, Major General, then. And I said, what are you having? He said, no, the treat's on me. And he brought us a drink. So, you know, great chap.
Anyway, let's get back to the Nakdong Valley, because you're now with Air Company in the Nakdong Valley. What happened to your company there?
We was advancing, and we took this hill, no opposition whatsoever. And the next day, because it was getting dark by the time we took ours, and then B and C companies was going to take another hill, like, a bit bigger than ours, across the valley from us. They went, and of course, they met a lot of opposition up there. Anyway, they kind of won the hill, and then the North Koreans, Gooks as they was called, counterattacked. And the Americans, planes came and bombed the B and C companies and strafed them, napalm bombers, and strafed them with rocket fire. Now, we had panels, long strips, silk, about 2 foot wide or 10 foot long. One was orange and one was reddish pink. And we used to put them in different positions each day. I suppose that was called, because in case any intelligence of the other side had happened to catch or find out about them, you know, there'd be a letter T one day and a letter L the next day or a cross the next day. But we used to change the positions of them, and on the T might be the cross member, might be orange today, and a couple of days' time, it's letter T again, because there's only so many permutations, like in that two pieces of cloth. Whether they was out or not, I wouldn't know. So that's another story. But that was that's what made you Murger, your VC there. Now, that was devastation. We were strafed, but we only lost one man, Paddy Dempsey. Now, in that trench, he was in the trench, we were all in trenches, obviously. Digger Nixon, and he's from Wrexham, he was in the same trench as Paddy Dempsey. And Paddy Dempsey got the full force of the rocket, and Digger Nixon in the same trench never got a scratch. Paddy was killed instantly. You know. I can't remember the casualties, but we suffered a hell of a lot of casualties on the 282. And my car number was H for Hill at 282. A coincidence, isn't it? I didn't know that when I bought it. I just yeah. So,
how close did the strafing come to you?
Oh, only a few feet, you know, more than yards. It was in our place, my section, Digger and Paddy.
What did you see of the casualties from the napalming?
You could only see them on the hill. Like, you know, you don't know whether they're our troops or their troops, you know, they're just figures. That's when the doctor of the Middlesex and a lot of the Middlesex lads helped the wounded down, like from the hill 2H2. And that was the 23rd of September.
What was the mood in the battalion after that?
Anti-Yankee, I suppose. Only because we automatically blame, you know, stupid Yanks, you know. But I don't know. I wouldn't say even to this day whose fault it was. Like, with the battalion hierarchy never created a big stink, you know. When Colonel Nielsen, who was the CO, wrote to General McMillan of McMillan, the colonel in chief of the regiment, he didn't seem to apportion blame either, you know. So, well, perhaps the lads never had time to put them out. I just don't know. Like, but that was the worst. We lost a lot more casualties after, but never as severe as that one. That was the severest.
What were conditions like at this time for you? Living conditions?
It was very, very hot. Very, very hot. You know, that's why you say when you're climbing these hills, although you're reasonably fit, the fitness for running and jogging and things like that, but when you come to climbing hills, it's a skilled job, like I reckon, and it takes you out of you. But at the time, fight. When you get to the top, when you're lost for breath, wouldn't it? But the lads did the job, by all accounts, B and C companies. I don't think if it hadn't been straight, it would have held the hill, no trouble.
Did you get reinforcements after this?
Got reinforcements from Leicesters, Norfolks, a few different KSPs, a couple of Black Watch, reinforcements from all regiments.
So what happened after this incident on the 23rd of September?
Oh, we just did patrolling. And then they landed. MacArthur, didn't he have a great big landing at Incheon?
Yes.
And we flew up. I thought we flew up from Taegu to Kimpo. I know the airfield is Kimpo, just outside Seoul. and we flew up because there was hardly any opposition then. After we crossed the Nactong, that was the battle. Not just those other regiments and other forces, Turks and Belgians and Americans predominantly. But anyway, we flew up to Kimpo Airport, and I can't remember the name of the place. We were just short of the 38th parallel. And then we was reinforced by, around about this time, the 3rd Australian Royal Regiment. That made up, was a full brigade then, the 3 regiments and Brigadier Code. And we started the advance then into North Korea. We didn't know whether we was going to go into North Korea or just sit on the 38th parallel. But the powers would be said, we carry on. So we moved forward then to the main big one, main biggest town was a place called Sariwon. Now that was a farce, comical to us it was. We were going that fast, and some of our companies had gone through Sariwon, and others were still coming up. And it's a big town, and roads come from all ways, and they was told to come back, you know, and we're going to stop this side of Sariwon, on the outskirts. When they met thousands of North Koreans going back on tanks and lorries, and we used to wear cap comforters. Nobody wore Balmorals or Glengarries, and they thought we were Russians, and they were saying Rusky, you know. And it's funny that the man who was in charge then, it was a fellow from excuse me, support company, Lieutenant Robin Furry, what a name. And he was the heavyweight champion of boxing, champion of the battalion, the same man, Robin. And then somebody gave the game away, and oh, hell let loose. But we never lost a soul, didn't lose anybody. But the North Koreans lost quite a few. Very unprepared. Well, we was unprepared ourselves, like, but we was more prepared than them. We knew who they were, but they thought we were Russians, so surprise was on our side. Like.
Did you open fire yourself?
Yes, yeah.
With a rifle?
Rifle, yeah. I was then, I was with A Company then there. Before then, Lieutenant Cawthorn, our platoon commander, he'd come to me, he said, oh, you're a Lance Corporal now. I told him in no certain terms, get lost. I said, hey, I just threw two in less than 2 months, well, about 3 months ago. I said, now you want to give me one back? I said, no. I said, no, not on, sorry. He said, well, you'd have to do the job of platoon corporal, like, or a section commander, or whatever it is like. And I said, I don't mind machine gun section. I said, I don't mind it. I said, but no stripes. Anyway, it's got a long, short story. About a month later, he came to me again. He said, you're a full corporal again now. So I told him, Michael, don't want any thinking stripes finished. I said, two in. He said, we'll have to do the job. I said, that's fair enough. So, you know, section commander, the lads knew. But nobody wore any stripes or pips, or you couldn't tell who was an officer or not, like, or who was a sergeant. Nobody wore any stripes, anything, all the time we was in Korea.
Why was that?
Well, he's giving the enemy, like, aren't you? And we was getting old Yankee gear, we were. getting winter then, excuse me. It was getting winter then, when we crossed the northwest frontier. I can't remember when we went up to Sariwon. But the winter was coming in, and whether it was coming straight from Hong Kong, we wouldn't be prepared for all this, any cold weather. So we bought Yankee boots and Yankee coats and everything, so you wouldn't be bothered putting any stripes up. But
were you warm enough with this clothing?
No, we weren't. It was absolutely freezing later on. We've now had some of our reinforcements. A couple of lads who'd been prisoners of war in Germany during the war. And a couple of times they said to me, like, it was as cold as this tonight, like it was last night. He said, the bloody Chinese can have me. He said, I'm not putting up with this. Oh, up in the hills, like, nearly all our we was clearing the hills, keeping off the roads. You'd go by tanker lorry to till you come under fire, and then you'd have to, of course, clear the hills, like, you know, many times raising fire, like, lost different battles, like November the 5th, bonfire night. We had a pitch battle, we lost a few men that night. I can't remember the name of the place where we was at. Chongju or so, Jongjungpo or so, one of these names, like. They've got these skirmishes. And then we got to, in the end, about 17 miles from the Yellow River. Sinanju was one of the places. And then we heard the Chinese had crossed the Yellow River from Manchuria. So we went down much faster than what we'd gone up. And it was a route. Then down to a place, well, there's another place called Kapi Yong. We passed out about 10 days previous going up, but we come down much quicker. We did odd jobs. We got to the Han River, and we was our town and Middlesex, our brigade at the former bridgehead on this, and the whole lot went back through us. You know, divisions I'm talking about. I think it was the 1st Cavalry Division, American, and we were the last to cross the river, like, you know, and then there's only pontoon bridges, so all the main bridges have been blown. We didn't have any skirmish there, though, and we crossed ourselves the next day. 4 days we was there, like, while the whole division passed through us, but the enemy wasn't that close behind. And then we retreated, and there again, it was retreating on tanks, and it was that cold that he was walking round the tank, because if you got in the front of the tank, you know, half an hour, and he was absolutely frozen solid, and then they'd go round, edge you round to the back. Well, the exhaust was there, vents, and they come up through the, it'd burn you, so you couldn't touch anything, your feet was burning, and so you know which was the best, burn to death or freeze to death. You know, it's a lot of laughing now, what the weather was absolutely bitter, cold. You know, you carry a can of water and be frozen before you moved any, before you got to any fire to put it on. Another Argyle, Count Agnew, he's dead now, from Manchester. He had on these twirly moustaches, and one morning he had just got a little twirl off in his hand, broke off solidly. So, it was cold. I mean, you'd ask anybody who served in Korea, what do you remember about Korea? And everybody says, oh, that blinking weather. It was cold.
Did you have any frostbite casualties?
No. Not severe frostbite. Only minor. Well, not to my knowledge, anyway. You know, our lads was all right. Only just on the verge. But we had... When we was back, I don't know how far back we were, we had